Good morning. What we're going to do today is spend some time looking at this parable of Jesus. And first, in order to understand its meaning, we have to sort of understand the historical or the literal significance of the parable. Obviously, we have this landowner who is in charge of a vineyard. Grapes were normally harvested about this time in Palestine, and it was a rush job because they had to harvest the grapes before the rains would come and ruin the crops. And so the landowners would go into the marketplace. This is where the workers, the day workers, would often gather in order to find jobs for the day. These are the individuals who weren't employed by some house or some family or some institution. They were there not to be idle and lazy. They were there to work because the landowners knew this is where they could meet them. And so the landowner goes out and brings all these individuals at different times of the day to harvest the grapes because he has to get it done as soon as he could. The rule was during the time of Jesus that you would get paid 1 denarius a day. That was a day's wage, the agreed upon wage. No matter when you started, that's how much you got. It was an agreed upon and understood thing. And so if we understand these things, we can better understand the parable and how it would speak to the people of Christ's time. But Jesus wasn't just there to tell the people a nice story. The parables were there to teach a lesson, often to sort of prick people's consciences, to make them think more deeply about their lives and how they treated God and how they treated others. So the main two lessons that people in the time of Christ would have understood are these, going beyond the literal meaning of the parable to see the deeper spiritual and moral meaning. First of all, Jesus is talking to the Jews, God's chosen people, those who had been there since the time of Moses. They were the ones who began working at the beginning of the day. They somehow maybe thought they were special. They were entitled to more. As opposed to the Gentiles. These are the pagans, the unbelievers, the people that the Jews at the time generally disliked and hated. And Christ was saying, soon the Gentiles are going to become part of God's chosen people. They're going to become part of my body, the church. And you're going to have to learn to live with it. Not to dispute, not to fight, not to argue. He was sort of foreshadowing the problems that would come in the early church that we see in the Acts of the Apostles and the writings of St. Paul. But Jesus was also speaking to the early church, those early Christians, the disciples and the apostles, who maybe were tempted to think that somehow they were special since they had always been there. Speaking to the Christians who would come later, these cradle Christians and Catholics, who maybe grew up Catholic, who had grown up in a Catholic or Christian culture, saying that they're going to be converts, people who come along who weren't always Christian, who weren't always Catholic, and they've got to be accepted. You're not special and entitled to more just because you were baptized when you were a baby, just because I was the one who called you at the beginning. He's going to call different people at different times, and they have the same chance to be open to receive God's grace and holiness. These are the two messages of today's parable. But in thinking about it, we can, of course, make applications to our lives. One of the glories of the parable is they're so rich that they can take different meanings and have them applied to different times and different situations. So as I was preparing it, I began to think about what might have happened after this incident. And I came up with two sort of extensions of the parable. I'm not claiming to be Jesus. I'm not one to give great inspired parables. But I thought of two extensions, sort of like other chapters you could add to this parable, that I thought would have very relevant applications to our world today. So the first one is this. The day is over. He's paid, the landowner has paid his wages, and he's packing things up. And he overhears a conversation from the people who began working the very, very beginning of the day. They were the ones who grumbled and complained against the landowner. basically saying, yeah, we think that we were cheated, but you know what? This landowner's a schmuck. He pays everybody the same daily wage, and we spent the whole entire day working. You know what we're going to do tomorrow? We're going to come in around the end of the day, because he's going to hire us, and guess what? We're going to get the same reward, the same payment, for the least amount of work. But the landowner hears and says, I heard what you two fellows are talking about. Guess what? Don't even show up tomorrow. You're not going to use me. You're not going to abuse me. You're not going to presume on my generosity and mercy. Go find some other place to work. And they walk away dejected. How would that apply to us today? Because it's this attitude that a lot of us can have. Workers in the vineyards, Christians and Catholics, that say, God's so merciful and so generous, I don't really want to put forth all that effort and all that work to become a saint and be a member of his church. I'm going to do the least amount of work possible just so I can get my reward. Just so I can get into heaven. So when it comes to Mass, is there a great desire to come and celebrate the resurrection? No, I'm going to come, show up, and I'm going to leave after Holy Communion. Because it's not that big of a deal. When it comes to our moral life, instead of asking, what are the ways that I can truly become a saint and give myself fully? We begin asking questions like, how far can I go with this sin until it becomes mortal? How far can I offend God and hurt others before I alienate myself from God's grace? But when it comes to getting involved in the parish, getting involved in the church, I don't need to be bothered by that. I don't need to volunteer for anything or be part of any of the groups. I just come to Mass and I check it off once a week. And that's if I'm doing these things, then I'm a good Catholic. I'm a good Christian. The reality is, this extension of the parable should make us question that. Should make us question, if we want to presume on God's generosity and mercy like that, trying to simply get away with the minimum that is required. So the landowner then continues walking and he's going home and he sees some of the people who came at the end of the day, the ones that he was the most generous to. And they encounter a man in need there on the side of the road who says, sirs, you've just been paid for your days of work. Would you be willing to help me out? I'm poor. I'm in need. I'm in lack of things that I need for sustaining my existence. Would you be willing to be generous? And they look at him and say, you got to be kidding me. I can't afford to give you any money. I'm not here to help you. You go work. You go take care of yourself. I got things to do with my money. And as they continue to walk, the landowner pulls them aside and says, fellas, I saw what you did. I was so generous to you in giving you all a day's wage for the hour work you did, and you couldn't even be a little generous to this man. Don't come back tomorrow. Go find somebody else. If I'm so generous to you and you can't be generous to others, I don't want you working in my vineyard. How do we apply that to our lives? We can see everything the Lord has done to us. The generosity he's given to us, not only in grace and in the spiritual life, but in the material goods that we have received. In this nation where we are so blessed, our family and friends, our time, our talent, and our treasure, it's all a gift. We don't deserve any of it. And the Lord calls us to be generous to others. The poor, the sick, the homeless, the uneducated, those who need things, whether it be in the material sense or the spiritual sense. But we make excuses why we can't do it or why we can only give this much instead of being generous and giving back for what God has given to us. We're not generous after realizing how generous he's been to us. Granted, these parables are not parables that Jesus taught, but if we take the same logic, we can apply it all the way across. So what's the problem? What's the issue? What's the root of the two reflections of these parables that should indeed prick our consciences, mine included, to call us to realize what our faith is about and what we are called to do? These two different groups of people that come in these two separate parables, the problem is ultimately that they lack love. They lack love. They don't know what it means to truly love and to give. Because if we, myself included, loved properly when it came to the work that we were called to do, we wouldn't want to do just the minimum. People who love what they do, love others, love their spouses, family, and friends, are always looking for ways to go above and beyond what is required. They never want to cheat people they love out of their time and what is owed to them. They want to give fully, and they want to give passionately. That's what we're lacking. The love for God, the love for our faith, we want to give ourselves fully because we love. We can put the love into sports and to work and to school and to hobbies. We love those things, but when it comes to our faith, we want to do the minimum because we don't love. The same thing in reaching out to our brothers and sisters in need, whether they be homeless on the street, whether they be sick, or whether they be the college student here on campus who is oppressed by all these people who are challenging their faith and their spiritual life. If we loved and cared about these people, we would want to give to them. Not because we had to, but because we cared and loved for them. Think of how we love our family and our friends and the way we're willing to go above and beyond what is required. Everyone's called to be our neighbor, particularly the poor and those in need. Love should dictate our generosity. The thing is I could sit here and I could tell parables, I could tell funny stories, I could scream and yell, I could chastise, I could do whatever, but I can't force you to love. Can't force anybody to love. I can't force myself to love. We learn to love God and love our neighbor by first experiencing the Lord's love for us, by recognizing His generosity, by recognizing that He's paid us in grace. He's been more than generous. And yet, how we've often taken that for granted. If we can recognize what He's given to us, we can recognize His mercy and His love and His grace and His blessings. And He's done it not because He had to, but because He loved us. Nothing forced His hand to give Himself to us. When we recognize that, then we want to respond in kind. Love is repaid by love alone. Love is repaid by love alone. Not as an emotion or a feeling, but a willingness to give of oneself and to give generously. So as we allow these parables to prick our consciences, to make us feel a little bit uncomfortable, we ask the Lord to give us that great experience of His grace and His love so that we may give back fully, not shooting for the minimum, and also, and so importantly, to be able to give and give generously to those in need. Amen.